AW Masters, reel 12.
Just one more thing on uniform then. Laundry facilities and washing. I mean, did you wash these by hand, or did people again set up laundries like set up during tailors or?
Well, now look, they underwent changes naturally, and of course the various classes of ship, going back again to the old days when you had coal ships, the facilities, hot water and all that sort of thing, bathrooms were there, and the facilities existed for doing your own washing, your own dobing as required, and there were drying rooms and so forth, usually in funnel casings or wherever the heat was available. And of course, irons didn't exist in those days, no such animal as electric irons. But anyway, they were all pressed and carried on so as to bring them up to the required standard. Now, gradually, in 1924, the Royal Sovereign, when I went to her, she was fitted with a laundry, a properly fitted laundry. And of course, it was run by the ratings, marines and seamen, stokers. And there it was possible for a man to take along all his dirty dobie in, hammock as well, and simply give it in. And I think I'm right in saying it was about 18 pence for a whole bundle, and have it all come back all dried and aired.
Before those days, though, there was a chance that some men would organise, you know, a laundry
A
system,
dobing
a
firm.
dobing firm.
Yes. Oh, yes, you had your dobing firms to do the tailoring. You had dobing firms to do the washing. You had snobs to do boot repairs if they were so minded. You'd have a barber. Anybody who could use a pair of scissors and had the guts to say they were barbers. Because, I mean, the requirements were the hair had to be short. There was no such fanciful hairdos or anything of that nature. But shaving was the man's own onus. The barber's never shaved, you see. And there was, in the training establishments, for instance, the staff usually carried, well, they were nearly always ex-Marines. And when it became necessary, a crowd of boys joining the service, just get in the chair, a pair of clippers over the top. That was right off the lot. There was no, please, sir, thank you, or anything of that.
When we talked there about uniform, you said how in certain kinds of ships you needed two uniforms in coal-burning ships. One thing I meant to ask you about and haven't really before was what you can tell me about coaling ship, these old enough before the First War, when you had a lot of coal burners in the
Well,
Navy.
so there was an right at the end of the war. But the only thing about it was, you see, the different classes of ship had different methods of embarking coal, depending upon the fitments on the upper deck, of course. And there were various ways. For instance, attached to the fleet, there were a number of colliers. There was a class of them, and they were named after, they were all Duncans with various names, Agnes Duncan, John Duncan, Robert Duncan, and so forth and so on. Well, if it was known in the fleet that, we'll just suppose you was in the fleet and you were coming in, we'll say to Portland, and you're going to coal ship, the word would get round Agnes Duncan. Okay, well, now all the experienced people knew what Agnes Duncan carried in the way of winches and derricks and so forth and so on. And the petty officers in charge of the various parts of ship would make arrangements in their parts of ship to cater for Agnes Duncan to come alongside, so that when she arrived, you might have to take in, we'll say, in a big ship, 2,500 ton. It was coming aboard with various derricks and systems, and it came aboard in sacks, and they were trundled along to the bunkers, just holes in the deck with chutes underneath to feed the bunkers below, and the whole lot was done by hand, and everybody in the ship, except those vitally on watch on other jobs, sick berth staff and all that sort of thing, were exempt. But everybody else was engaged in coaling, officers included. And so you went on merrily from daylight to dark or the end of the story, you see. Now, if he was in a much smaller ship, of course, that Agnes Duncan type wouldn't be much use to you, because their big derricks would be all right for catering for the big boys. But you had to involve other methods for the different type of ship, you see. And if you was in the old class destroyer, for instance, where they carried about 200 ton, well, that would have to be dealt with by possibly 6, 8, or 10 hands, according to the size of the destroyer, you see. And you had to work out your own salvation from the word go. And then again, there was another system, you see, such as usually abroad. They would come along, the coal would come alongside in lighters. And from there, they'd rig staging down the ship's side. And it would be suspended on wires. And the top rung, we'll say, would be 2 planks wide. The next one down would be 4 planks wide. The next one down, if requisite, would be 4 or 6 wide. So that the baskets in which it was transporting the coal from the lighter up was lifted. You see, from the lighter to the bottom, up, up and up. Because in such places as Port Said, Malta and Gibraltar even, you had native labour. Well, that was okay. You could stand on the upper deck and smoke while the boys were doing the job. But of course, the dirt was yours to get on with afterwards. But the whole essence of the thing was, if you started coaling, the routine of the ship would be such that the cooks would be producing the food. And so that at the specified meal time, you see, the food would be already cooked, and people would proceed to their messes, wash on the way down, and have a meal, straight back over the side, do more coaling. Well, if you can understand that while the fleet is an ordinary routine in peacetime, of course that's all catered for and it's all well and good, but under war conditions it became a little bit more arduous than that, because you might have been at sea, we'll say, 5 days, and you'd be almost empty of coal, come straight in from sea, regardless of provisions you might want or anything else, straight alongside a collier. The small ships go alongside a collier, you see, and proceed to fill up with coal, then go back, if there was time, to a berth, to embark anything you wanted in the way of, in the old days, bread, meat, spuds, food of all descriptions. And of course, canteens in those days were run by civilians, so that if Joseph could get ashore in his boat, you hope to God he could, because he could get the wherewithal to fill up the odd corners. And if to be the circumstances didn't allow, then you went to sea without it again. But
coaling ship was the first priority coming back.
Get full up
passage.
The coal.
That was the first thing.
Yeah.
And when you were saying that in the big ships there were derricks on the colliers which could be located and in certain ways, you just discharge the collier into the big ship. When you said that 8 or 10 men or whatever number of men would look after it, did you mean that it was basically a manual job from on these steps as you used abroad, where you lifted bags out? Yeah. So many men were in the holds.
Man to man.
Man to man.
You had some people in the holds filling bags.
Right.
You had other people down there stropping the bags up. In other words, pass strop through back to the derrick hook. Mm. The whole essence of the job was yours. Mm. From filling, getting those bags to the batch down below. When they came up, the same thing occurred on the other way, the reverse angle, down. As soon as that bunch landed on the upper deck, a man or men were there to take the strops off, and then there were wheelbarrows to take a sack or sacks there and there. Mm. In other words, everybody get going.
Yeah. And it was only in ships where you didn't have a derrick, or where the derrick wasn't suitable, that you used the hand method where you had these people...
Not necessarily. The point is, you see, if you get to a place like Malta in the old days, the method of coaling was by stage,
right,
regardless of what class of ship we were talking about.
That was
big ships as well, big ships or small ships. Yes. You still did just the same job.
All the hands were actually over the side lifting it?
Not all of them, but so many. Yeah. A number, yes. If he was going to rig, we'll say, put a number on it, say they're going to have 20 stages each side of a ship, you see, in a big cruiser, for instance. Well, you would allocate that number of men for that number of stages. You see, and they would be allocated by the various petty officers in charge of parts of ship as they knew them. And the moment it started, they turned off on a bugle, right, where you go, And so you was at it, you see, all the way up. Well, they used to cater for drink to be handy. And in those days, the large kettles, they used to hold anything up to 3 to 5 gallons, the big ones. And they'd make up a mixture of possibly lime juice, possibly barley water, or lemons, whatever there was available, you see. But it was always there. And, I mean, there was no restriction. There was nothing about you don't do that, do this sort of thing. No, 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 no. It was all human.
Yes.
But, I mean, the essence of the job was get it done.
And did this involve the officers, I had the impression?
Yes.
They were there too,
oh,
on the deck?
Oh, definitely, yes. Every man jack. Yes. Oh, they'd come up with their coaling rig, which in those days, of course, they used to usually wear a pair of, we'll say, old grey flannels and an old uniform jacket or whatever old covering there was. And instead of the neat collar and tie, which was always the thing, you see, even to ratings. Oh, no, you can leave them off and have a scarf or a wrap round or whatever you designed to keep your own body as clear as you could.
Was it a kind of, in spite of the arduous character of it, was it a kind of relaxed session? Just
oh, yeah.
Because of this breakdown?
Yes, yes, yes.
Do people...
But there was no actual discipline about it, but at the same time there was no jumping over the border with it, you see. The essence of the discipline was still there. But the actual job, well, there was a job to be done, get on with it. You see, no interference, there was no don't do it that way, do it this sort of thing. No, no, no. Because if you're dealing with 2,000 tonne of coal, you haven't got time for that. Mm-hmm. And be it a cruiser, for instance, if he was taking in 700 to 1,000 tonne, or even if he was filling up. You see, now going right back to that sloop I was telling you about, the minesweepers, when we were down in New Zealand, the only method they had of coaling ships there was, of course, the big freighters that used to go in for coaling, they had the 10-ton railway wagon, and it was held on a sort of a, well, what should I say, like a cradle, and it was simply tipped up, 10-ton, over the top.
Yes.
Now, you imagine a small minesweeper coming in, and, of course, as much as we could carry on the upper deck was 90-ton. And that, believe it or not, was carried between the funnels on the boat deck. It was the only place for it. And of course the ship, I mean, from our point of view, and I think I'm quite right in saying, if it had ever been tested, that wouldn't have passed the Board of Trade requirements, because that 90 ton of coal on the upper deck would naturally have upset her balance, you see. Anyway, nothing happened about it, because we were lucky, I suppose, in getting away with it. But in the South Pacific, as you can quite understand, you're dealing with a different type of sea. And it was a bit frightening, because even you had to fill up all your available space. That was the point. Because we were faced with going back either way from Sydney to Wellington. Is in the area of, I forget what it is exactly, but somewhere about 1,500 miles across the South Pacific.
And in the case of calling, they say that there were signals going up and down between the various ships. This one was ahead, or that one wasn't ahead. This was quite, and this was used to encourage you to.
Yeah. You see, what they would do, they'd hoist flags. They'd all start calling if it was a fleet evolution, for instance. You see, or even an individual ship. The moment she started coaling, they'd hoist a pennant, which indicated to the remainder of the fleet that she was out of routine, and everybody knew he was coaling. Now, if the fleet was doing it, or a squadron, or even a division of ships, they would all hoist these pennants. The time would be given to start, we'll say, 8 o'clock in the morning. Whatever the time was, up went the pennant. So that was watched. Right, so-and-so started. At the end of an hour, a bunch of flags went up, numeral flags, which would indicate the amount of coal embarked in that last hour. Well, we'll say it was, just for argument, say one ship hoist 250. Well, that word soon got passed around. Black Prince 250. Well, if you was in defence, good line. Up go your flag and it'd be 265. See? Right, we're getting on famous. And then suddenly, possibly due to an accident or possibly due to other conditions, somebody would hoist, we'll say, 230. Ooh, tail ending. In other words, that lively competition carried on, quite friendly, but it was always a case of, we want to be first. You see, there was always that pride in a unit, which emanated really from the training ship. When the boys were put in classes, you was given a number. And if you was in 204, it was 204 you got to study, to the exclusion of 206, 8 to 10.